Don't be afraid of the dark. Just relax and let the darkness fall over you.
Welcome to Afraidish, a podcast where every four episodes, we venture into a new state and take a deep dive into the history and paranormal while enjoying some tasty adult beverages. From ghost sightings to hauntings, urban legends and cryptids, let's get weird and afraid-ish together. Hi, I'm Paul.
And I'm Ashley.
Hello and welcome to episode 13, or episode 1 of Arkansas.
What?
Can't believe we missed it last month.
I know.
It's crazy.
Last month was a crazy month. Not that this month's going to be any less crazy, but...
Yeah. Just really busy and sick and not with COVID, but sinus infections and everything else.
I get a head cold every time the weather changes.
Yeah.
It changed 8 times in January and February, so I've just been sick.
Yeah. Well, let's just get into it.
Okay.
Here are fun 5 facts about Arkansas.
Fun 5 facts.
Here are 5 fun facts. Number 1. Arkansas got its name from French settlers in the region. The word Arkansas is pronounced with a silent S at the end. Interestingly, it is against the law to mispronounce the word Arkansas while in the state.
Can Missouri include one of those laws? Yeah. Although, you know what? Somebody like... fucking Governor Parsons would be like, it's Missouri. It's legal to pronounce it Missouri.
Yeah. All right, number 2. Arkansas is also the only state in North America where you can find a diamond field.
Mm-hmm.
The largest diamond ever discovered in North America was found in Crater of Diamond State Park in 1924 at 40.23 carats.
Holy shit.
Yeah, it was named Uncle Sam. More than 33,100 diamonds have been found by park visitors since the Crater of Diamonds became an Arkansas state park in 1972.
I mean, that's fun and all, but what happens when they mine all the diamonds, you know?
Yeah, I mean. Number 3, the diamond mine is the only one in the world that allows the public to keep what they find. Interestingly, a 13-year-old from Missouri found a 2.93-carat diamond in the Crater of Diamond State Park. Did you know that diamonds are also Arkansas's state gem?
They have a diamond field. Why not?
Yeah. Number 4. Did you know that the first Walmart was opened in 1962 by Sam Walton in Rogers, Arkansas?
I mean, I didn't know the exact day, but yeah.
It is interesting to note here that Walmart employs a staggering 2.3 million associates around the world, out of which 1.5 million are employed in the U.S. alone.
Sounds about right.
Yep. Number 5, Tyson Foods, now the world's largest producer and marketer of chicken, began with a single truck shipping chickens from Arkansas to Chicago in 1935.
Wow.
Now, let's drink from the Enchanted Springs and gain some knowledge about the 1886 Crescent Hotel and Spa.
Okay.
As American pioneers pushed west in the mid-19th century, people began settling the northern Ozarks along the Arkansas-Missouri border. A few were attracted to the present-day site of Eureka Springs due to the rumors of a great network of mineral springs in the area. Local legends abounded of how the Native Americans of the Osage tribe specifically inhabited close to the wells where the thermal waters healed their minds and bodies. After years of exploring the surrounding countryside, Dr. Alva Jackson supposedly discovered the location in 1854. He was convinced that the spring water possessed the magical medicinal properties of myth after it healed the eyes of his ailing young son. Dr. Jackson quickly established a practice in a nearby cave selling bottles of the water as a tonic called Dr. Jackson's Eye Water to anyone who ventured to his outpost.
Gotta love love capitalistic white men. Yep. They will literally sell you water.
He even used it to treat wounded soldiers in both sides during the American Civil War, especially those who fought in the Battle of Pea Ridge, a few miles to the west outside of Leetown. Staying in the area after the war had subsided, Dr. Jackson invited his friend, Judge Levi Best Saunders, to his retreat to help heal a festering sore in his leg in 1879. Miraculously, the judge attested that the mineral waters had repaired his injury within the span of just a few weeks. Judge Saunders then dedicated himself to Dr. Jackson's cause, using his connections throughout the region to spread the world, to spread the word about the well. The judge's son, Buck, suggested that his father and Dr. Jackson refer to the attraction as the Eureka Spring, as an allegory to the fabled Fountain of Youth. Judge Saunders' campaign worked. Soon enough, some 20 families had migrated to the area and established makeshift camps near the doctor's practice. Their arrival heralded the beginning of a massive population boom that saw hundreds of people settle the locale over the next two decades. The first year alone, the settlement had grown large enough that the Arkansas state legislature consented to incorporate it as a city. For a time, Eureka Springs was even the largest community in all of Arkansas, save for the capital, Little Rock.
Wow.
Eventually, news of Eureka Springs reached a few businessmen across the state, including a former governor of Arkansas named Clayton Powell. Powell and several other capitalists had specifically become involved in the railroads, funding the development of new train routes through the Ozarks. Like most locomotive tycoons at the time, those active in Eureka Springs desired to incentivize recreational travel along their tracks. Therefore, the businessmen constructed magnificent hotels as a means to encourage passengers to use their services. Powell soon helped finance the construction of the Eureka Springs Railroad, which functioned as a spur of the much larger St. Louis-San Francisco Railway, otherwise known as Frisco. He then constructed a luxurious hotel retreat called the Crescent Hotel nearby.
Oh?
Both were fully operational by 1886. Powell had financed their development through his Eureka Springs Improvement Company, which had also played a role in creating a modern sewage system, an electrical grid, and newly paved streets for the city. His plan worked flawlessly as countless visitors flooded downtown Eureka Springs by the end of the century.
Wow.
Numerous stonemasons were brought in from Ireland to begin the construction in 1884. Due to the density of the magnesium limestone used to build the hotel, special wagons were constructed to move the massive pieces of stone from the quarry site on the White River. Designed in an eclectic...
Are you okay? No. Having a stroke?
Having a stroke over here. Designed in an eclectic array of architectural styles, the masons built 18-inch walls, several towers, overhanging balconies, and a massive stone fireplace in the lobby.
Yes, that fireplace. Which is
so beautiful, yeah. As construction continued for the next 2 years, more and more workers were hired as electrical lights, modern plumbing, steam heating, an elevator, extensive landscaping, and luxurious decorations and amenities were built into the hotel. In the end, the hotel cost $294,000, or just over $8.7 million in today's money, to build.
Wow, that... I mean, I guess it's not, like, a massive hotel.
Yeah.
But that sounds like a low... Even in today's money, that sounds like a low dollar amount to spend on a hotel.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe I'm just used to, like, Hiltons and...
Yeah. An extremely extravagant amount for the time.
Right.
On May 20th, 1886, the Grandiose Crescent Hotel, aka the Grand Old Lady of the Ozarks, opened amid much fanfare. The local Eureka Springs Times Echo called it America's most luxurious resort hotel, Notables from across the country attended its grand opening, including a gala ball, complete with a full orchestra and banquet dinner for 400 celebrants.
Wow.
Offering large airy rooms with exquisite furnishings, a dining room that once seated more than 500 people, and outside amenities that included a swimming pool, tennis courts, and croquet, among a beautiful landscape of flower gardens, winding boardwalks, and gazebos, the luxury of the hotel was unmatched at the time. Immediately, the well-to-do of the nation began to flock to the luxurious resort hotel as liveried footmen met them at the Frisco Depot before transporting them to the inn. Once there, the guests could enjoy not only the healing waters of the spa, but also a stable of 100 sleek-coated horses, tea dances in the afternoon, and elaborate parties every evening with a full in-house orchestra.
Wow.
That must be nice.
Pays to have money.
Yeah. However, the prosperity was not to last. After the turn of the century, people began to realize that the acclaimed, quote, healing waters didn't have the curative powers that the hotel and the city were so known for. Little by little, people stopped coming to the beautiful resort. From 1908 to 1924, the building was utilized as the Crescent College and Conservatory for young women, but continued as a resort during the summers. However, after operating for 16 years, the revenues from tuition and summer guests were not high enough to maintain the costs of running the large building, and the women's college closed. After sitting abandoned for the next 6 years, it briefly opened as a junior college from 1930 to 1934. When Norman G. Baker opened his, quote, Baker's Cancer Curing Hospital at the Crescent Hotel in 1937, he was already widely regarded as a medical hack. A former vaudeville actor and self-proclaimed inventor, Baker had originally risen to prominence as a local radio host in his hometown of Muscatine, Iowa. He spent his days advocating populist causes that denounced the supposed greed of America's largest corporations and financial institutions. He probably would have lived out his days as a well-respected wealthy man had he not abandoned the station for a career in medicine. In 1929, Baker had become aware of a special cancer sanitarium operated by Dr. Charles Ozias. Ozias supposedly cured his patients using a tonic that relied upon a concoction of glycerin, carbolic acid, and alcohol. He then mixed the formula with watermelon seeds, brown corn silk, and clover leaves. I don't know why.
Like in a paste? To inject.
Yeah.
Not ingest? Inject.
Inject. Yeah.
Yeah.
Curious to know if the cure worked, Baker asked for 5 volunteers to try the treatment. While all the patients died within a year, Baker covered up the results and argued that respected treatments like radiology were of little use. Instead, the homeopathic formula he advertised was the salvation for those suffering from cancer. A year later, he had acquired the patent to Dr. Ozias' cure and opened the Baker Institute to serve as the headquarters for his operation. Using his radio station, Baker advertised the tonic water throughout Iowa. Okay, no, this was the tonic water. Later on, he uses it to inject. So, in the beginning, it was used as a tonic water.
The mixed with watermelon seeds, corn silks, and clover.
Okay, yeah. In the beginning, I'm sorry, I got that confused. Yeah, in the beginning, it was a tonic water that people drank.
Okay.
He attracted scores of patients and amassed a personal fortune worth several hundred thousand dollars.
But he did.
Eventually, Norman G. Baker attracted the unwanted fury of Morris Fishbein and the American Medical Association.
And for good reason?
I don't know if it's Fishbein or Fishbein. It's F-I-S-H-B-E-I-N. Fishbein? I don't know. Published a thorough attack on Baker's unfounded medical expertise in the Journal of the American Medical Association, accusing the radio host of fraud and deception. Baker was livid and launched his own diatribe in retribution. He specifically filed a defamation lawsuit against the American Medical Association, hoping that it would cease its assault.
I'm making up shit and pulling it out of my ass, but you're ruining my reputation as a practitioner of medicine.
Yeah.
Ooh.
He even conducted an open-air surgery in front of a large crowd where he pretended to use his tonic to heal a man with an inoperable brain tumor.
Oh my god!
Nevertheless, Baker's reputation took a severe beating, especially as an ever-increasingly number of patients testified to the ineffectiveness of his techniques. He lost his lawsuit against the American Medical Association, and state officials began investigating his clinic. Baker finally snapped when the state of Iowa issued a warrant for his arrest for practicing medicine without a license. As such, subsequently fled to Mexico, where he attempted to construct his own 100,000-watt radio free from the jurisdiction of the Federal Radio Commission.
I'm assuming that didn't go over well.
I don't know. Norman Baker remained south of the border until 1937, when he returned to Muscatine. Spending a single day in jail, he tried to pull his life back together, but he had become a social pariah, looking for new opportunities elsewhere in the United States. Baker relocated to Eureka Springs, Arkansas. He soon discovered that the beautiful Crescent Hotel was for sale, which he said looked like a castle in the air.
Yeah.
Baker then managed to acquire enough capital to buy the building, turning it into another medical facility that he called the Baker's Cancer Curing Hospital.
Who gave this man money?
I have no idea.
White men will give other white men anything to do white man things.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Yep. Treating people with the same tonic water that he had originally used in Iowa. Baker was back to fleecing his patients out of their life savings. According to the U.S. Postal Inspector, he received an annual income of $500,000.
Back then?
Back then.
Back then?
Yes, $500,000 back then.
Ooh.
I didn't do the math, but it's a lot. Yeah.
My God, well, I have too much integrity. I am keeping myself poor by being a decent fucking human being.
Make some tonic for your clients.
Fuck.
All the while, his patients routinely died in the hospital while under his care, obviously. But federal authorities soon learned of Baker's operation, and they began to quietly undermine his operations. Investigators were finally able to make an arrest after nearly a decade when Baker attempted to mail several advertisements for his services, alleging that he used the mail to swindle the consumers. Excuse me. Baker was tried before a federal judge on 7 counts of fraud. The jurors found Baker guilty and sentenced him to 4 years at Fort Leavenworth Federal Prison. Meanwhile, the hospital shuttered its doors and resumed its prior identity as a vacation retreat. Baker served his sentence in full, despite several efforts to overturn the conviction.
So he owned the building while he was in prison. Who was running the resort?
I don't know.
I'm sorry. Probably, I asked questions.
Probably management that he had.
Okay.
So I don't know.
Why would you know? That's how my brain works.
Yeah. He retired to Florida upon his release in 1944 and died in
1958. Oh!
What?
Oh, I don't know. I was just expecting more drama. Like, I've heard so many stories about what happened while he was there.
I think I got confused with our previous story.
No.
No?
No, because Kim, hi, if you're listening. I saw Kim last night. She goes down there. She didn't say frequently, but she's been there more than once. And she was, like, they do the ghost tours and stuff. And, like, yes, like, the crazy shit was happening. Supposedly, like, nobody died. Like, that was their thing. Like, we have a zero mortality rate or whatever.
Yeah.
And that's why he was sneaking the bodies through and down the chute.
Yeah, they had the morgue in the basement.
Which is where the spa is.
Which is down the hall from the spa.
No, the where the massage rooms and the facial rooms are, that's the hall.
Yeah,
that's what I'm talking about. It's not, okay. So it's in the spa. The spa is in the morgue.
And they slid the bodies through the...
down the mountain.
Down the mountain.
You know...
And a truck picked them up.
Can you find the exit of the body chute? Like...
I don't know.
Somewhere around the mountain?
I have no idea.
Oh, God. She'll be coming around the mountain. Also, you read that article about the organs and entrails in the jars that had been chucked down the side of the hill?
Uh-huh. Not done yet.
Okay. Sorry. Well, it was like, and then he died. And I was like, what about all the, like, shit that he pulled?
Yeah, that's 1958. I haven't gotten to today.
But he was the one that pulled the shit. If he's dead, who's pulling shit?
Oh, the entrails and stuff? Yeah, I don't know.
Okay. I don't know. I'm sorry.
I put more in this. I don't know.
Well, you did the research. I would hope that if you came across the information, you would have included it. I'm sorry. I'm just asking questions.
It's fine. During the war years of 1940 to 1946, the beautiful building once again sat empty. However, in 1946, the hotel was purchased by four Chicago businessmen who began to restore the old hotel to its former elegance.
Chicago businessmen? Or Chicago businessmen?
It says businessmen. Anyways, though never at the level of its first grand days in the late 1800s, the hotel again began to thrive.
Late 1800s were the Gilded Age. So. Yeah.
Unfortunately, tragedy struck in 1967 when a fire swept through the fourth floor of the South Wing and much of it was destroyed.
Would that be where the room 419, is that?
I'm not sure.
Man, I was so fucked up while we were down there that normally I'm really good north, south, east, and west, but I don't think I ever caught my bearings the whole entire time we were down there.
Well, I'm always directionally challenged, so.
Yeah, but I'm not. And I had the, okay, so when I say I was fucked up, because most of you listening don't know the situation, we went down there, I got the worst motion sickness I've ever experienced in my entire life.
We'll talk about our experience at the end.
Okay, but, so, I never recovered the whole time we were down there. I had no idea what was up, what was down.
Over the next several years, the hotel passed through several hands as repairs and more restorations were made, but it was never fully restored to its original grandeur. However, this changed in 1997 when Marty and Elise Roenick purchased the historic inn. In May 1997, the couple announced, "In 5 years, we pledge to have this Grand Lady of the Ozarks back to where she was 100 years ago." But Ozark residents have heard these promises too many times before, were skeptical.
I mean, you know.
In 1997, the Roenicks began to rebuild the spas. That first year, a 6,500 square foot New Moon Spa opened, including Vichy Showers, a hydrotherapy...
Vichy Showers.
A hydrotherapy tub, sauna, massage, and therapy tables, tanning beds, and exercise equipment.
Tanning beds.
Yeah. The next major project was to restore the hotel's skyline, destroyed in the 1967 fire. Costing well over $1 million, the 3,500 square foot penthouse, original center observation tower, and the 200-pound, 24-foot-tall crescent-mooned weather vane was restored, which is beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, restorations of the guest rooms, lounges, electrical and plumbing, and landscaping were also going on. On September 6, 2002, Roenick's bold announcement became a reality. After $5 million in renovations, the Grand Hotel had been fully restored to its original stately glory.
Only $5 million.
Yeah. And now for the hauntings.
All right.
It is said that after the skeleton frame of the hotel had been constructed in the 1880s, that one of the Irish stonemasons plunged to his death in what is now room 218. This room proves to be the most spiritually active in the hotel and has attracted television film crews for decades because of the quantity and quality of the ghost sightings reported. Which, if we get to go, I want to stay in one of the most haunted rooms. 218 or 419, or I think it's 419.
I mean, I wouldn't sleep.
I mean, we would
have to go there and it be an all night thing and not we're gonna sleep here thing.
I mean, if ghosts are truly real and people do actually experience stuff, those would be the rooms to experience stuff in.
You're not wrong. God, fuck me.
Throughout the history of the Victorian Hotel, employees have referred to this entity as Michael, a classified poltergeist due to the nature of the unexplained activity. Guests have witnessed hands coming out of the bathroom mirror, cries of a falling man in the ceiling, the door opening and slamming shut, unable to be opened again.
We experienced plenty of that. Oh
my
god,
we're going to talk about that. my gosh, that was terrible. The intrigue of this activity had drawn guests to specifically request the historic accommodations of room 218 for the chance of experiencing something. In the hotel's crystal dining room, many employees have encountered playful spirits in Victorian dress. One holiday season, while the dining room was closed, the grand Christmas tree and packages underneath moved from one end of the room to the other. The next morning, employees found the tree and packages moved with chairs circling and facing the newly placed holiday symbol.
Big ghosts were doing their white elephant gift exchange. Yeah. Aww.
Another time, employees returned in the morning to find the dining room in perfect order except for menus scattered throughout the room. Huh. Could be the wind. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, those menus were pretty heavy, though. They are,
yeah. I mean, I don't know how long ago this was and what the menus were like then.
Well, like, I'm thinking, okay, what did menus look like when I went to restaurants in the late 90s? They were those big plastic...
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Envelopes where you stuff the paper between the two pieces of vellum that were, like, bordered in, like, fake leather plastic with the crimps on the corners, you know? Terrible description.
Yeah.
But still.
Anyways. Yet another time, a waitress looked into the huge mirror between the doors from the dining room to the kitchen and saw a man and woman in Victorian garb facing each other as in a wedding.
Aww.
The groom turned and made eye contact with the waitress, and then the couple faded away.
Oh, they always disappear after eye contact. Yeah.
The waitress quit her position shortly after this incident.
I mean, they weren't, like, violent or anything. Yeah, like, wouldn't be enough to scare me. It would be enough to scare me. It wouldn't necessarily be enough to scare me off.
Yeah.
You know?
Another commonly reported paranormal activity is a man in Victorian clothing sitting at a table near the windows saying, "I saw the most beautiful woman here last night, and I am waiting for her to return."
Aww.
Many have recounted seeing apparitions in Victorian ball attire dancing around the room during the wee hours of the morning while the room was closed and dark. In the 1930s, the Haunted Hotel in Eureka Springs became an experimental cancer hospital. Dr. Norman Baker, claiming to be a licensed physician, examined cancer patients in the hotel's basement while charging unsuspecting families their life savings. Mm-hmm. Several apparitions from the hospital visit the hotel today. Dr. Baker has been seen in the hotel lobby, which he didn't die there. I don't know why he would be seen there unless it's a situation where, like, you're... energy is spent in one place for so long that it gets pulled there or whatever.
I have three postulations. So, one, in a place like Eureka, where you've got natural springs, You've got lots of different types of stone, specifically lots of limestone. You know, you're on a mountain.
That energy these stays things there, yeah.
Hold energy. So that it could just be a purely residual haunting. And especially like with the ball, the people dancing in the ballroom, like that energy kind of gets like recorded and released. It's not intelligent. Now, if the apparition of Dr. Baker is in any way intelligent or like.
Right.
You know, that's a different story, but that could be what that is. Another theory that I have is, A, first of all, let's not pretend that we know anything about what it's like after life.
Yeah.
just because, you know, we are corporeal, we can only be in one place at any one given time, doesn't mean that's how it is when you die.
Yeah, I mean, our spirits can be in multiple places, I'm sure. If you spent time in these places, I mean, why not be in more places?
Right. You could either be like, it could be a situation where he spent a significant portion of his life there or significant events of his life, even if it wasn't like a long extended period, but something significant to him happened there.
Right.
I mean, he was not a good man. He did a lot of bad things to innocent people under the guise of medicine and healing. And that kind of shit, like, it manifests things. And,
yeah.
You know. Anyway, continue.
Anyway. He is described as a man in a purple shirt and white linen suit matching photographs of the infamous entrepreneur.
Entrepreneur.
Yeah.
He's an entrepreneur like a Hunbot is.
A nurse pushing a gurney residing in Dr. Baker's old morgue area is known to squeak and rattle down the halls of the hotel. A hotel maintenance man witnessed all the washers and dryers mysteriously turning on in the middle of the night.
Hmm.
The laundry room is located next to Dr. Baker's old morgue, which still contains his autopsy table and walk-in freezer.
Hmm.
Now let's meet Theodora. Records are a bit confusing as to whether Theodora was a cancer patient or a hospital worker, and it has been speculated most that she was a nurse who became stricken with cancer while employed in the hospital and then became a patient until she died.
So both.
Yeah. Room 419 is Theodora's room. She died in this room. This is the second most requested room in the hotel by guests. No, room 218, Michael's room, is the most requested.
Okay.
There are two different stories as to who Theodora was when she was alive. Some think she was a hospital worker during the time that the building was Dr. Baker's cancer hospital. While it still remains a mystery, some witnesses who have actually spoken to the spirit of Theodora have said that she introduced herself as a cancer patient.
Hmm.
When she is seen as an older woman fumbling for her keys outside of what was her room 419. She is also reputed to have an aversion to untidy spaces and is known to organizing things in this room if she feels it is in disarray. If you leave your belongings scattered, you may return with them neatly placed. Guests have reported jewelry being moved, sometimes going from on top of the desk into a drawer.
Whoa.
Both men and women have also reported being lightly touched while laying in bed asleep. This lends itself to the theory that she was likely a nurse. Although Theodora is said to be a kind spirit and welcoming energy, in one story a couple unpacked their things, then went downstairs to meet friends. When they returned, their suitcases were packed and sitting by the door. It was later determined that Theodora did not wish for them to stay in the room as they were arguing with each other when they were unpacking their things.
Oh, shit.
They took the hint and decided to stay elsewhere.
They wouldn't stand a chance in that room.
I wish something said that with the couple across the hall.
Fuck me.
Steve Garrison, a cook at the hotel, swears he doesn't drink on the job. He doesn't drink, period. However, Garrison may have been tempted by two strange encounters in the kitchen of the haunted hotel's crystal dining room. One morning, while slicing and dicing vegetables, he looked up and saw a little boy with pop bottle glasses, dressed in old-fashioned clothing and knickers, skipping around the kitchen.
Hey.
Another morning, Garrison flipped on the lights to begin the day's preparations when some or all of the pots and pans came flying off their hooks.
Ew.
The Crescent Hotel has so many ghostly tales to tell that tours of this historic place of the in the Ozarks are held throughout the year. The 1886 Crescent Hotel and Spa offers exciting ghost tours that have often produced some very spectacular tales. The guides themselves have many countless paranormal stories from their time at the hotel, too. One such guide revealed that she had met a couple that was staying on the first floor near the governor's suite. The couple subsequently told the guide that their second night in the building, they had slept with just a sheet covering the two of them. The husband then awoke in a deeply sweat, realizing that someone or something had tucked him in with a comforter. They had been tucked in three more times that night.
Yeah.
That'd be crazy. Sleeping under a sheet and then all of a sudden just waking up sweating. And
first of all, I cannot only sleep under a sheet because of the demons. Sheet is not enough of a force field between you and the demon.
Yeah.
I don't believe in demons, but...
Yeah. And another guide recounted an incident where two guests checked in into room 221 one early spring afternoon. Upon leaving the elevator for the second floor, they immediately encountered a man wearing an all-black Victorian-style outfit. With a smile, he asked the guests as to whether or not they required help finding their guest room. Believing the person to be a hotel employee, they agreed. The man in the Victorian attire then led the two to room 221, unlocking the door and pushing it open. As the couple entered, the man stayed outside the door, smiling and tilted his head from side to side. One of the two realized they had not tipped the man, and when they spun around with some cash, he had seemingly disappeared.
Hmm.
Perplexed, the two guests just relaxed in their guest room for the rest of the day.
Was it actually their room?
When they tried to re-enter room 221 later that evening, the door would not budge.
Hmm.
The couple then descended to the front desk, where they asked what was wrong with the key. The staff member stated that they had somehow received the key to room 321. The two described the man who had originally let them into room 221. The staff member reported that no such person presently worked at the hotel.
Wow.
Brecky, a four-year-old child of Richard and Mary Breckenridge Thompson, died in the hotel due to complications from appendicitis.
Aww.
He has been seen throughout the hotel, often bouncing a ball. Dr. John Freeman Ellis, the hotel's in-house doctor circa the late 19th century, is most often seen, or his cherry pipe tobacco is smelled, near his office, which is now room 212.
Mm-hmm.
Morris, the famed hotel cat, was known as the hotel general manager for 21 years.
Yeah.
And later buried on the hotel property, is regularly seen and heard.
Well, there's also a cat, so... Yeah,
they keep the cat, they keep cats in there, you know.
I have a story about that, too.
Okay. A recurring phenomenon happens in a spot on the third floor where the hotel connects to an annex built on the hotel when it was a hospital. The area, which is the room, that's the floor we stayed on.
The servants' quarters?
Yeah.
Okay.
Multiple guests have grown faint, with a few passing out briefly at the same stop on the nightly ghost tour with no reasonable explanation. The occurrences go in spurts, many happening over several weeks or months, and then none for some time. Guests suddenly turn pale, falling against and then sliding down the wall in a faint.
Hmm. I wonder if it has anything to do with, like, the season? Like, the time of year? If it is happening all, like, say, for instance, in the wintertime.
Right.
When they're doing their remodeling. Because I felt lightheaded in the whole time we were there that next morning while they were there working.
Yeah, they were peeling paint and painting, so there were fumes, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I never, like, felt faint, right. But I felt a little dizzy.
Although the loss of consciousness does not last very long and complete recovery is immediate, it tends to further substantiate the hotel's legendary supernatural connections to the paranormal. Or it could be a paint job. I don't know. There has been quite an uptick in the activity in the morgue. I think we have stirred things up a bit with the discovery of the remains, says Deborah, the Duchess, manager of the nightly ghost tours, referring to the 2019 uncovering of a secret bottle grave of the Crescent's most infamous resident owner, Norman Baker. A certified archaeologist, Dig, found hundreds of bottles of Baker's, quote, secret formula, as well as jars containing medical specimens that had been surgically removed from patients. A dark figure has been seen recently in the morgue, and there has been an increase in cold spots and reports of people being touched.
Eek.
I can't believe, like, a dark figure not spotted before this dig. That is pretty interesting to me.
I mean, yeah.
And now comes to our visit to the 1886 Crescent Hotel and Spa. Yeah, we stayed there on the night of January 17th.
Yes, we did.
Yeah. So, let's explain our stay.
So, well, first of all, as I mentioned before, I've never, ever in my life gotten motion sickness. Like, never. I don't know, you know, also, I am getting older. Yeah. Things change as you get older. But, like, I've always been good with roller coasters. I've always been, like, I've always had a pretty hearty equilibrium.
Right. Well, okay, from our house to Eureka Springs is not exactly a straight way. It's all hilly and, like, very much, very curvy.
Well, there's different routes that you can take, yeah, too. The route that we took, so we were dropping our children. No, it wasn't our children because your mom was staying here. We dropped my mom off at her new house and then left from her house and went through Crane down that way.
Yeah.
Where there's another way that you can kind of come up kind of through, not through Branson, but...
Yeah. Yeah.
Further east of where we went down. And that was a much smoother, straighter route. The route that we were routed by Google because of where we were departing from. Shut up, you whore. was very windy and very hilly. It was beautiful. The view was absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, it was.
I was fine for most of the drive. And then I just started feeling poorly. And at first it was just like, I'm not feeling good.
Right.
And then I was like, oh, I'm really not feeling good. And then it was like, okay, just keep your eyes closed. Okay, that makes it better. And then the eyes closed didn't help. And then I literally had to put my head between my knees. And that helped for a little bit. And then that didn't help anymore.
And I had to pull over. And coincidentally, the only spot to pull over was in an ambulance parking garage.
I was like, he asked me if I was okay. I said, I just need the car to not be moving anymore. I got out and I just like sat on the ground in this ditch.
It wasn't a ditch, it was a parking lot, but.
Well, I was sitting in a ditch. I was sitting in a ditch off the, because you parked right on the edge of the parking lot. Oh, it was rough. It was so bad. And then I was like, okay, I can do this. I can do the rest of it. I get back in the car and I'm like, well, how far away are we? 20 minutes. It was the longest fucking 20 minutes of my life.
Yeah.
And we were only about 10 minutes outside of Eureka at that point. The other 10 minutes was driving through Eureka to the hotel. Oh, it was awful.
Yep. And then we got to the hotel. Well, what?
When I told one of my clients about that, she said that it might have been like the spirits didn't want me there or something. Like they were trying to keep me away. Well, I've never ever fucking had motion sickness before. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, we got to the hotel and it was super nice.
Yeah.
I mean, it's off season, so they're doing work on the hotels.
Which we expected. Yeah. I mean, we got fucking dirt cheap.
Anyways, so we're assuming, you know, we're not going to, it's not going to be packed. They're going to give us a jacuzzi room, which used to be the servants' quarters. And there's only two on the third floor, mm-hmm. right across the hall from each other. Well,
for those of you that are not familiar with the Crescent Hotel, so like many old manor houses, right. they annexed the servants' quarters because they didn't want the servants to be able to be like seen and heard yeah. and all that, you know? And then in the 70s, I think, they turned them into, like, the jacuzzi suites with, like, yeah. little kitchenettes.
So, yeah, the servants' quarters, these rooms are a little bit bigger than the normal rooms because yeah. you used to have, like, a kitchenette.
And they have, like, a lounge area yeah. where they've got TVs now. And then the jacuzzi kind of divides the room in half. Yeah. And then so you've got, like, where you walk in, where it's, like, the seating area, and then you walk kind of between the bathroom, the closet, and the jacuzzi, and you're at the bed.
Yeah.
And they're kind of shaped like long rectangles with a little teeny tiny punch out that sort of forms an L, but not quite.
Yeah. So we get there, and
it was fine. Yeah. I mean, it was quiet. We checked in. We got to our room. We kind of like lounged around. The only thing that we could log into on the TV was Disney Plus, so we started watching Star Wars.
Yeah.
While I tried to, like, recuperate from being yeah. ill, it was awful. So I just, like, sat on the couch, turned on Star Wars, and just tried to, like, not be sick. And then it was dinner time, so we got ready and we went and had dinner.
Yeah.
At the Skyline, the pizza
that
bar.
Was really good.
Best freaking pizza ever. Yeah.
That pizza is amazing.
Beautiful view, too, because yeah. we were eating right at sunset, and you can see, like, especially in the wintertime, you can see so much further because the trees are defoliated.
Right.
And so you can kind of see further yeah. through them. And it was just, oh, so gorgeous.
When was it that the couple got across the hall?
So after dinner, we kind of wandered around the hotel, like, very briefly.
Yeah.
And then went back to our room, and I was like, I need to find a drugstore or something and get some Dramamine before we leave in the morning.
Right.
And I wanted to do it that night because also I wanted to get snackies for the hotel room. And I didn't want to like lose any time the next day, like walking around the town. I didn't want to be like searching for a
right
drugstore. So we found a Dollar General. We drove to the Dollar General and we got Dramamine. And Oreos.
Yeah.
And then stopped at a gas station and got a bottle of wine because I had left my ID in the hotel so the Dollar General employee wouldn't sell us wine.
Yeah.
Even though I'm almost a 32-year-old lady. Which is fine. Like, I get it. I did the whole cashier thing and I would regularly give people a hard time over their IDs just because I could. Yeah. But anyway. It was when we got back from Dollar General
That's right, yeah.
trip that they were there and
yeah, so I unlocked the hotel room and the hall is narrow. So this lady's standing in her door with the door open.
Yeah,
her mate, I don't know if her husband, boyfriend, whatever. He's sitting in a chair shirtless with a beer in his hand. They're arguing.
So they were there when we got back from Dollar General. Like, yeah. it wasn't like this happened while we were in our room. No. We come back and walk into the situation where she's standing in the doorway with the door wide open. He's sitting in the Birka lounger
yeah.
with the beer. And all you can hear is her saying something about, I'm waiting on so-and-so to come bring me some ice. I'm waiting on so-and-so to bring me ice. And, like, that's all she would say over and over and over again. And then so we get in our room. Like, she and I make eye contact. And you would think, like, okay, she'd be embarrassed, close the door, and, like, wait quietly. Oh, no. I think I made her mad by making eye contact. I awoke the beast. Because then we start hearing shit like, I'm not going to stand here and let you mentally and emotionally abuse me. Blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, oh, my fucking God.
We're going to have to hear this shit all night.
This went on for an hour at least.
At least.
And finally, if it had continued any further, I was ready to call down to the front desk and complain. But she tattled on herself because she requested to get herself a new room away from the boyfriend. Yeah. Or whatever. But then it didn't stop.
No.
Because then he was by himself sitting in there watching TV with the door open.
Which I don't like. If you're in a hotel, shut your fucking door.
Like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
So then Paul goes down to the front desk to get his phone charger out of the car and stops at the front desk on the way. And what did you asked them to check on him?
Yeah, or? I'm like, well, I said, I'm on the third floor and the couple across the hall that were fighting, I guess she found another room. He's like, yeah, I know exactly who you're talking about. I'm so sorry. would you like another room? I'm like, no, he's got his door open a little bit. Can you check on him? And asked him if he can close the door. And then I went out and got the charger.
And, well, I knew, because we had discussed it on your way down to get the charger. You said you were going to stop and ask about that.
Yeah.
So I knew that you were, but what I was not prepared for was the door slamming with force. Like, they called up, asked him to close the door, and he didn't like that, so he decided to slam that fucking door. And then the way that the rooms are set up, there's a fire escape that's between the two rooms.
Yeah.
But it's on the back side of the room. So, like, there's two, each room has a door to lead out just into this little teeny tiny landing where you can open the window and go down the fire escape. And so he opens that door on his side. So Paul was like, I don't know. Is he trying to, like, get away with smoking in his room or what?
Probably. I don't know.
Like, but if you're trying to get away with smoking in your room, you don't want to leave the door open because then the cigarette smell wafts down the hallway and everyone knows you're smoking in your room. I don't know.
It's stupid.
People are weird, man. People are weird.
So then I...
Then you pull out your app.
Is that before or after the ice?
Oh, I don't remember. I forgot about... I mean, I didn't forget about the ice, but...
Well, I go... No, I think this is after. After the app.
I don't know.
Anyways. So I'm going to pull up something in a minute.
It was... I think it was after.
Anyways. Well, I went... ice hunting. I grabbed an ice bucket, went to the our floor, and tried the ice machine, and it was broken. It didn't work. Anyways, so I'm like, okay, I'll just go to the next floor. So I went to the fourth floor, couldn't find an ice machine. Walked through the ghost tour with an ice bucket. You know,
I mean, you're staying in a hotel. Yeah. They have to expect that.
And while I was on the fourth floor, I walked through the ghost tour again. And somehow, when I went down to the second floor, they were on the way down, and they stopped, and I had to walk through them again. And then finally, I went to the bottom floor, to the front desk to ask for ice, and I walked through the tour again.
Oh, my goodness.
And I wanted to say, don't mind me, I'm just the ghost looking for ice.
Yeah, that was really funny. I'm just trapped in this hotel, wandering eternity, iceless.
Yeah. Anyways, so before that, we got some apps called
Ghost Tube. They're invented by an Australian couple who I follow on YouTube. Their channel is called Amy's Crypt, and they do like ghost hunting videos. And they've had a really rough couple of years, so if you're into that kind of content, definitely go follow them. I really like the way that they conduct themselves. They are always very respectful of any spirits, unlike some certain Zach Baggins that we all know and love to hate.
Yeah. So, I can play a few short...
Are you going to try to, like, upload them into the... So that the audio is more clear.
I'm going to try this first.
Okay.
So
So be aware, people. He is playing a recording off of his phone into a microphone. It's not a perfect system.
Yeah.
So don't come for us about interference and shit.
So this is when we asked some questions and we listened, and it has words already downloaded, and I guess it goes off the energy.
They have a dictionary of, I don't know off the top of my head how many words they've loaded into the dictionary. They're constantly adding more as they have time. But basically the premise of it is that each word is assigned an EMF degree or whatever, like a number, and then a frequency. There we go. Each word is assigned a frequency, and the ghosts can manipulate the frequency to give the word that they want to give.
All right, so here we go. Here's the first one.
Oh no, there's a ghost.
Is anybody here with us?
7.
All right, so here's another one, which is very interesting.
Am I dead?
Are you dead?
Are you dead?
We are not dead.
We are not dead, but you are.
And here's another one.
Do you want to talk to us?
We're friendly. We're here to stay the night and talk to you. What's your name?
Okay,
you want to talk?
All right, so this was right before we left the hotel.
We're here to say goodbye now.
I'm leaving.
Yeah.
Are you leaving? We would like to say goodbye. Please do not come with us.
Yes, as lovely as it's been visiting with you, you cannot follow us home.
It's funny because your shadow on the door.
Hello.
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 All right, so those were pretty interesting. I mean, I'm not saying those are ghosts or anything.
But we're not saying they're not.
And we also, ghosts? Yeah. We also did what they call a spirit box. It goes through different
radio frequencies.
Supposedly, it's supposed to go so fast it shouldn't pick up. You shouldn't pick up a full word.
Like, right. It's supposed to cycle so quickly that it chops things up.
Yeah. So if you hear a full word, it's supposedly a ghost.
Yes. That's the idea.
That's the idea.
We're keeping open minds here.
I got some weird noises and some words. So do with it what you will. Take with it a grain of sand. All right. So here is the first of the spirit box.
Is there anyone here with us? How many are here today? Do you like being here? 4.
All right, so what's weird is we did some more recordings of stuff like that on the spirit box, and really didn't get any other sounds or voices from the other recordings. So
there was some music.
Yeah, music. And
that what seemed to be pretty responsive to my questions about the music.
Yeah.
But I swear to God, and I thought we had recorded. We may have not been recording when this came through.
Yeah.
But I swear on my life, I don't remember the question that was asked leading up to this response, but the SLS got the response, "We are working," after we asked a question, which would make sense considering we stayed in the servants' quarters where they both lived and worked.
Yeah, I don't think we recorded that one.
Which is very upsetting for me.
Yeah. So yeah, that's our experience in the Crescent Hotel.
Yeah, overall, and I have to say, you know, I'm a pretty, I consider myself a sensitive person. I can sense energy. I would never go so far as to like call myself a medium or anything like that. But I can definitely tune in when there's been a lot of history in a location over a period of time. And I felt so comfortable in our room.
Yeah.
With the exception of the crazy couple across the hall.
Yeah.
I spent a significant amount of time alone in that room during the ice bucket challenge and the the getting the watch charger debacle.
Yeah.
I probably spent a good 20 to 25 minutes alone in that room. Well, me and Han Solo, but I never felt uncomfortable until he pulled out his app and started ghost hunting. And that's when I got uncomfortable. But I think that was more of like a psychological situation. Yeah. And then while we were trying to sleep and failing miserably at it.
Yeah.
I was so on edge. The ice bucket. It took me probably till about like 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning to figure this out. But I kept hearing like this sound. Like I could never replicate that. But like it sounded like something like clinking across the room. And it was freaking me out. And it would always happen like right as I was finally starting to drift off into dreamland. And then I would hear the shifting sound. And then I finally realized, I was like, oh, duh, that sounds like ice in a glass of water. It's the ice bucket, the ice in the ice bucket melting.
Yeah.
And shifting around. So that one was debunked, but it kept me up all night.
It was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun. I definitely would stay again. It would definitely have to be a situation where I'm prepared not to sleep.
Yeah.
You know, because I wasn't prepared not to sleep at all. I wanted to enjoy Eureka Springs the next morning, which we did. It was a lovely visit.
Oh, yeah, it was.
Spent a lot of money on not a lot of yarn, and I am not upset about it.
Yeah, we went downtown to the shops, the ones that were open anyway, in the off season.
Yeah, which was the yarn store and the candy stores.
Yeah. Anyways. So, if you stayed there, would it make you afraid-ish? I mean, for us, it just depends on what room you stay in. Like I said, I want to stay in room 419 or was it 218?
Yeah.
So,
there's that. Didn't Michael die because he was catcalling a woman?
No.
No?
He fell.
That's what I thought. He fell because he was hanging off. He was rubbernecking trying to see a pretty lady.
Oh, I don't know.
But I don't. Maybe not. I don't know. Because if he died during the construction, there probably would not have been any women on or near that construction site. So.
So yeah, that's the 1886
Crescent
Hotel and Spa. All right. So if you have any stories or requests of anything you want to hear about, or if you know anyone who does, please email us at afraidishpodcast@gmail.com, Instagram and Facebook at afraidishpodcast. Visit the website at afraid-ishpodcast.com. All the links will be in the show notes. We'll have our own photos for this story.
Yay!
None taken from the internet this time.
Yay!
Don't forget to rate and review on Apple Podcasts and rate on Spotify.
Yes!
And as always, don't be afraid of the dark.
Be afraid-ish of what's in it.
Bye.
Bye!